Okay, so again, for this evening's talk, a few events happened during the week which brought to mind one of the big problems people have in life and how the teachings of the Buddha address those problems very beautifully. Sometimes people misunderstand those teachings. And so this evening, the topic of the talk is going to be... Da-da-da. Exciting, isn't it? It's amazing people come over here, just listen to a talk, they don't know what we're going to talk about. It's like going to a movie and you don't actually know what's on. But nevertheless, people come because must be good movies every week. So the topic of the talk this evening is going to be attachment. And it's opposite. And hopefully during this talk I'm going to show that now how it does, what actually attachment is and how it does create problems in your life and how actually you can let go of them. And how you can overcome the fear, because sometimes, especially in Buddhism, people think that, oh, the opposite of being attached is being so detached that you live under a bridge, you know, you just eat from dustbins and that you don't have any happiness, you don't have any sadness, you're totally detached, you can't enjoy anything in life. And that idea of detachment, like, you know, just like you're a robot, like you're some sort of automaton, like, you know, you've got sort of no life in you at all. And you never even smile because you're too detached to smile. Sometimes that happens. I tell jokes and some people are so superior, they just look at me and they don't laugh at all. They're trying to act detached. And that's not being detached. So today I'm going to sort of say, how's a Buddhist? Yeah, you can enjoy life, but without being attached. And this is an important thing to understand, that this can be done. You don't need to sort of be afraid, oh, if I let go, life will be miserable. That's one of the great things of like seeing happy monks and happy nuns. You think, my goodness, these people have detached, but you know, they're having a good time. There must be something to this non-attachment business. And now I'm going to tell you how it works. But of course, the first thing, there's many things we get attached to in life, and let's just start with the easy stuff. I mean, all just your physical possessions and people possessions and all that sort of stuff, which sometimes the amount of stuff which we have, you know, we think we own them, and as you all know, it's the stuff owns us. And that's the big problem. And once we understand how much it owns us, my goodness, why can't you just let it go? You know, there's Salvation Army, St. Vincent de Paul, Buddhist Society of West Australia, you know, just give it away and then you're free. That's actually what I learned as a monk, just to let things go. And it's amazing just how free you can be when you've got few things. And every couple of weeks when I'm here, I always say that you live in two big houses. Every now and again you read the newspapers, you see just how big people's houses are. And my goodness, that must take such a long time to clean. So be lazy like me. Have one room, that's all you have to clean once a week. Now just have one set of clothes, I only have to do my washing just once a week. And so you don't have to have all these big wardrobes. I've been in people's house. When I grew up you had like a wardrobe. Now you have a walk-in room for wardrobe. And that's actually, most houses are like that these days. And just, how many clothes can you wear in one go? And look, that's it. This is actually funny. When I was in northeast Thailand, it was a very poor villages. I know what they used to do over there. You could always tell, you know, the girls, you know, when their parents are trying to marry them off, because you see them, they'd wear all these beautiful clothes. And because, you know, we were monks, we'd go and do the marriage ceremonies for them, you know, do the blessings. So you see, you know, the young girls in the village grow up and they get to that age and then they wear these beautiful clothes and then they get married. And the next day, you see the next day, they'd have their rags on again. Because the family could only afford one set of really nice, attractive clothes. So all the nice dresses and clothes, once it had, you know, done the job and got this other husband, you know, then she went back to her rags and the nice clothes went to the younger sister again. It was really a big con job. But at least it had a sort of a purpose to it. So, you know, just once you're married, you don't need those, you know, expensive dresses and perfume anymore, do you? Or do you? Maybe to keep the husband or keep the wife. But it was, you know, they just had very few possessions. But I'm not saying that you should give up everything and live like us monks. But at least you can always lessen your possessions, lessen some of the things you're attached to. But what happens when, you know, there's a charity sort of pickup or something, and you think, oh, I'm going to give some things to, you know, the swap meet or the, you know, the white elephant store. And you look at these things and, well, you know, this that might be useful. Oh, I like that pair of shoes. Or, you know, that photograph is really important to me. Now you can actually see what attachment is actually doing to you. And as a monk, our whole lifestyle is actually teaches us not to attach to these things. Because what we actually do, in monastery at Bodhinyana where I live, all the monks, you know, people like Venerable Buddha Rakata sitting next to me, every 2 years they have to move huts. And they're not allowed to use any removal vans. Nobody can help them. They can't use any vehicle. They have to carry whatever they've accumulated in 2 years to their new hut. And it's just reminding everybody just how much we accumulate, just even as a monk in a couple of years. And how much do you really need? And it's very lovely to actually to see when you've hardly got any things at all. One of my most memorable experiences as my training as a monk, after 5 years being a monk in these monasteries in Thailand, you were expected, encouraged, to actually to leave the monastery and just go wandering on foot. It was a great opportunity to visit other teachers. You know, you've been in one monastery. Now let's see how the other teachers teach. Get some wider experience. Or maybe go and find some solitude in the jungles or the mountains. So that was after 5 years. What would that be, 1979 or something? Somewhere around then. I left the monastery. And the rule was you couldn't store anything there. You could give it away, but once you gave it away, nothing would be kept for you. So everything which was yours, you had to carry with you. And of course, if you're walking, especially through the hot tropics, carrying lots and lots of stuff, it's just really, really unpleasant. Because it was reminding you just how much a burden your possessions were. So after a couple of days, you know, you gave this away and you gave that away, and you were down to the absolute minimum you needed. And that was, once you got down to that minimum, my goodness, it was so light. And you can imagine the experience. Now just put yourselves in that experience. That everything you own, you're carrying on your back, and it's light. Now you can dance. There's hardly any burden there at all. Because for a monk, we knew that there's monasteries everywhere. Any place you go, you can get a bed for the night. If you don't get a bed for the night, you can sleep under a tree. It's the tropics. It's easy to do. And you go any village, you get something to eat, not delicious food, but enough to keep you going for the day. There's waters in the well. It was this total sense of freedom. Freedom from possessions. And that was just like being in heaven. You didn't have any worries at all. You had the clothes to wear, you had this little mosquito net umbrella which you could park anywhere to sleep at night. And the best thing about it, you had no appointments. Your future was blank. I could go anywhere I wanted. Every crossroad, you could go left, go right, turn around, go forward, stay still. No one was asking you to go anywhere, to do anything or be anything. And that was one of the most wonderful experiences of being free from attachments at all. Now, maybe you may not be able to get to that stage, but I'm telling you, the less you have, the more free you feel. So you don't have to have, you know, this is bad for the economy, I know. I'm going to get into trouble with, you know, Mr. Swan, the treasurer, for not encouraging consumption. But it's great for the environment, and just how little you actually need to survive. And when you've only got a few things, you've hardly got anything to worry about. Have a simple car. Then nobody's going to sort of, you know, steal it. Have a simple house. So no one's going to actually rob anything from you. Poor old burglars, they go into a Buddhist house, you actually put a sign there. I go to Ajahn Brahm's talks and they look at it, they haven't got very much in their house. They're simple people. So you don't need to have expensive things. And I say that because, look, a couple of weeks ago, I was in Hong Kong, and it was absolutely a crazy place. There they took me to see one of the sights of Hong Kong for a monk to go and see, was this street with all these designer shops. And you had to queue to get in, you know, to the Versace or Gucci or what the others, I don't forget what the names are anyway, the Rolex, whatever it is. And there was actually a queue outside. People were just trying so hard to get in. And they were just ordinary clothes, just rubbish clothes. I mean, what do you want all that stuff for anyway? People don't see it. So to me, it was just, what are people spending so much money for these stupid things? Why can't they just get an ordinary dress or an ordinary pair of shoes, you know, from the $1 shop and give the rest of the money to the earthquake victims in Christchurch or to the floods in Queensland or these other things which are really needing money in the world? It doesn't make any sense to me. But why do we do these things? Because we have been brainwashed. And this is the thing which the talk about attachment. Where does that attachment come from? We've gotten brainwashed to think we have to have all these things to be happy. That's why monks like me, we're radicals, we're rebels. If I was living a different age, I'd be nailed on a cross or burnt on a stake or something like that. Because we're actually saying, no, come on, guys, girls, think. How much do you really need to be happy? Is it the more you have? Actually, usually the more unhappy you are. Well, I told that story, I think, last week, because, you know, these things have stayed in my mind. That house which I went to bless, I won't say where it was, one of the suburbs in Perth, it was on the river. And when I went there, this huge mansion, and this is no joke, when I went there, I was traveling from Serpentine, I needed to go to the toilet. And I asked the lady, where's the toilet? So she got out a piece of paper and drew me a map. Now, that's a big house. It was true, that's what she was. But the point was, I asked her, how many people live in this house? And, you know, it's, I don't know how many bedrooms, 10, 12 bedrooms. She said, just me. I live in this house alone. And you'll find in many of those big mansions, maybe one person, two at most. Isn't that telling you something? What it's telling you is that in those big places, people are imprisoned by their wealth. You know why? Because she said, I asked her, why don't you have some friends or relations in here? She said, I'm afraid of my relations. I'm even afraid of you. You might ask for a donation from some project or whatever. Because that's what rich people are afraid of, attached to things. So it's nice to live simply. And of course, I ask everybody in this room to really think seriously about this. Because one of the biggest problems facing our planet is not economic revival. The biggest problem is the environment, sustainable use of the limited resources of our planet. And we do need to live simply. So as a Buddhist, you can start now. Smaller houses, less clothes, smaller cars. Use public transport if you possibly can. Live more simply. And it's not only you find you're actually doing something for your kids and your kids' kids so they've got a planet which they can live in, but actually you have much more fun as well. You know, number one, you know, you don't measure yourself by the expense of your clothes or your jewelry or whatever. How can you measure a person with that? That's not the measure of a person, just how much money they have. It's their character, how much fun they are, how good they are, how kind they are. And that's not something you buy in a shop in Hong Kong. That's actually what you learn in places like this. So that's why that sometimes there's a queue of people trying to get in here, because this is designer Buddhism. This is very, very high class and very costly. But what it really means is we understand what's really valuable and what's not valuable. And that is a problem with attachment. We're attached to the wrong things. That's why sometimes people say, should you not be attached as a Buddha? Say, no, be attached. But be attached to the right things, not the wrong things. The things which are going to give you some peace and happiness, some love, prosperity, not just short-term prosperity, for you know, your inner prosperity, the prosperity of your family, the values of your family, being together, love, companionship, friendship, you know, fun, happiness. Be attached to the causes of that. And then you find out that actually we're letting go of these possessions. We're not letting go of happiness. We're not letting go of comfort. We're not letting go of the things which are really important in life. Because sometimes people say to me, sort of, well, I'm getting old now. Has the Buddhist Society of Western Australia arranged for my superannuation? And they haven't. There's no superannuation. I've got no retirement plan. I don't think they want me to retire. But they ask me, what is your insurance for your future? And I keep saying to people, look, my insurance, the monks and nuns' insurance for their future, our insurance plan, is just our good karma, the kindness and the generosity and the service which we've given. And I know I've given so much over these years. I've got no worries about my future. There'll always be somebody to look after me, to feed me, and if I ever get sick or whatever. I've got the best health plan in the whole country. It's a store of good karma, kindness. That's going to look after me in the future. So sometimes you wonder, what am I working so hard for? Am I really working on the right things, attaching to the right things? So yeah, you can actually simplify your life, but you actually get greater happiness that way. Number one, I mean, you don't have to impress people with this, the bigness of your car or the suburb where your house is or just how big your house is, because that's all that's for, isn't it? It's just to impress other people. You think, I've made it. Look at me. I've got my big house, my nice car. I've got another sort of place somewhere. Actually, look at me. I've got my country estate. And I've got my townhouse. Yeah. But I don't own these things. Now, this is important. You can use these things, but please don't ever think you own your possessions. That is called attachment. It's a myth of ownership. Now, you know that's a myth because someday someone's going to, you know, going to crash your car, you're going to total it, or someone's going to steal it, or you know your house is going to be repossessed or something because you lose your job or whatever happens in the future. You don't know what's going to happen. These things happen to everybody sooner or later. So, you know, what do you really own? And I can't pass by the story of one of the people who used to come here from the very early days. And the only thing he was ever attached to, the only possession he had, was his Harley Davidson, this incredibly beautiful motorbike. And those things are worth $50,000-$60,000, even more than that. Just a bike is just worth a huge amount of money. But that was his pride and joy. He, you know, just stayed in with friends. He just rented houses with people. He just wore old clothes, but he had his Harley. And he told me once, I think he was over in Sydney somewhere, he went shopping and he parked his Harley in the shopping centre. And he just maybe half an hour, that's all it took. He went to buy something. When he came back to the car park, his Harley was gone. Someone had stolen it. And he'd been a Buddhist for a long time. And he thought, am I attached to this? Can I let it go? Someone's stolen it. Because he wrote to me about this afterwards. And he said he really thought about it. Look, it's proving what the Buddha kept on telling me, what the monks and nuns have always said. I don't own these things. It's not really mine. And he actually let it go. And that's what he wrote. He was so proud of himself. All these teachings he'd been hearing year after year, they finally worked. He'd lost his only possession, the only thing which was really worth anything, had been stolen, and he could be at peace with it. Okay, I let it go. It's okay. I can live without the Harley. And he was so pleased with himself. He could actually do a letting go. It showed him he wasn't attached. And there's some karmic forces which are really weird, because as soon as he realized he'd let it go and he felt the joy that he wasn't attached, it was only then he realized he was on the wrong level of the car park. You know what it is. You've done that sometimes. And of course, he went back to the correct level, and there was his Harley Davidson sitting there. It was a beautiful experience for him. It just tested him. And now he knew he could enjoy that Harley Davidson with knowing he wasn't attached. Enjoy it for these extra months and years which he had with this Harley. And he knew that when somebody eventually stole it, whether it got crashed or whatever happened, he knew he could let it go. He realized, yes, he can enjoy without being attached. Now that is one of the most important points of this talks. How you can enjoy these possessions, these things which we use, the relationships which we form, the people around us, how we can enjoy that without being attached. So what I'm saying is, you don't have heart, don't give up all your Harley Davidsons, don't give up all your cars, don't give up all your money, don't give up your houses, don't give up all your clothes, but give up ownership of them. Give up this idea that they belong to you forever and ever and ever. That is a problem of attachment. And you can see how that happens with, and most importantly, your relationships, the people around you, you know, your children and grandchildren, your wife, your husband, your parents. These are the things that sometimes, even I've already given the game away, we say, my children, my wife, my father. And it's that MY we put in front of things which is the key to the problem. And this is a problem that somehow or other, when we add that word to them, we think we own these people, that we possess them. And I'm sure that many of you know what I'm talking about. When you've been in a relationship and you think you've been owned and possessed, and what does that actually feel like? Yeah, it's yucky, it's terrible. And it's no real relationship at all. Any real relationship, I don't own you. I don't possess you. You're my friend, my partner. We walk side by side, who knows for how long. But we know that one day we must part. If it's not sort of this year, maybe 10 years, maybe 50 years, maybe eventually in death. But we know that we come together eventually to part. And once you understand what I'm talking about, that's not a fearful thing, but that's something very beautiful. The simile, the best simile which I have, and again it's an old simile, but concerts. Already, so you all know that story about my father's death, and I wasn't sad when he died. And I enjoyed his company. I loved that man. I was told many stories of the beautiful things which he taught me. Now, most importantly, that opening the door of your heart, that came from him. He taught me how to love deeply, properly. And then he died when I was 16. And I shook his body, middle of the night, trying to wake him up. So I felt his death. I was right there, it was close to me, and that was really important. I mention this because I was talking to someone earlier this week about when he was with his father when he was dying. And what an amazingly powerful that experience that is. If you want to have a spiritual awakening, be with someone you love when they die. That's really teaching you what real sort of spirituality is, what attachment or letting go is. And if you know the trick, it's one of the most beautiful moments of your life, being with someone, letting them go, and enjoying this wonderful act of love. The greatest act of love is letting someone you care for go with your blessing. Selfless love, beautiful love, loving this whole process of life, of coming together, being together, and parting. But of course, at that time of 16, I felt that, but I couldn't understand it. And the reason I tell so many stories is because some of these emotions, some of these truths, you can't just define them in a couple of words. The best way is to find something else in life which people really know and understand, which is similar to what you're trying to talk about. And that's why I came up with this simile of a concert. You've all been to concerts. And you all know when you walk into that concert hall or that sort of nightclub, you all know that it's going to end. But does that stop you going to that concert and enjoying it? It's because you go in there with the full realization, this is temporary, it's going to end. That means you can really fully enjoy it because it's not going to last that long. No, be mindful, be right in there, enjoy it to the max. It's not going to last. And when it does finish, you don't get sad. You don't get upset and cry. I never cried when my father died. And I've never cried at his funeral. I've never cried since. I don't feel like crying. I've gone right in there and see, Am I suppressing anything? No, I'm not suppressing anything at all. I feel this great sense of joy, as I did then. The same joy I felt when I walked out of Concert Halls. What a great time we had together. What a beautiful music that was. That was just priceless. Now that's what I mean, how we can enjoy without being attached. So when the time comes from the musicians to go on another journey away from us, we never feel sad. Instead, we feel enriched. So your children, not really your children, let's call them the children. Yeah, you look after them. You enjoy them. You get totally frustrated by them when they're in their twos or threes or whatever. And you think when they get to five, six or seven, they become nice. But, you know, teenage years, here we go again. They drive you crazy sometimes, but you love them to bits. But you have to let them go to free them. Who knows where they're going to live? Who they're going to marry, or whether they're going to become monks or nuns. You've got to let them go. You've got to free them. And that's pretty, it's not that easy, but it can be done with kids. You can free them. You can let them go. You can liberate them. And that's why that we should remember that. Can you liberate your wife, your husband? Can you let your sort of parents go? Unfortunately, I have been too many bedsides counseling people who are dying and realizing the problem is not the person on the bed dying. The problem is the relations. Don't go, Mum. Don't go, Dad. Please, you can't. They may not be saying that, but that's certainly what they're thinking. Have you lost a parent recently? Did you let them go? Or did you try to keep them? Try to stop them on their journey? Because I don't want you to go. That attachment causes enormous amount of pain. There's a lady sitting in front of me who taught me something once when her husband died. I remember this moment, Jenny. I always will, with Steve. When I came to see you, Steve was dying, but there was something stopping him. And I told you, have you given Steve permission to die? Remember that time? And you did, and it was one of the most memorable experiences. She jumped up on the bed, hugged her partner, who she loved dearly, said, Steve, you can die. I give you permission to go. That was a beautiful act of love, of letting go, not attaching, but enjoying without attaching. Loving without attachment. Now that is something which not only keeps away this terrible tears, this grief, this very great pain which you feel when the person does go, but lets them go beautifully. Now your kids are going to go off and do things which maybe you don't approve of, maybe you do approve of, places. But if you fight and say, I don't want you to go, not only are you hurting yourself, but you're hurting them as well. If you don't let the person dying die peacefully and beautifully, it's one of the great problems which I see in this world, that people look at death as if it's the worst possible tragedy. It's almost worse than being illegal. You know, you're not allowed to die. I want dying people's rights so we can die freely. Peacefully, without everybody trying to interfere with us on our dying process. No, you can't die. You can't die. Look, it's my choice. Get out of the way, loved ones. It's my time to die. Okay, let me. And celebrate it with me. Celebrate. Haven't you seen? When a baby is born, what do? They cry. They know what's going on. Oh, my God, here we go again. When a person, you've been to funerals, they're always smiling in the coffin. When a person's born, they cry and everybody else smiles. When they die, they smile and everyone else cries. They get it the wrong way around. Look at the person who's being born. If they're crying, you cry with them. If they're in their coffin and smiling, you smile as well. Oh, they're happy. Marvelous. Wonderful. Well done. Because that's how we can enjoy without being attached. Understanding that all of these possessions, not possessions, let's use another word, all of these coming togethers which we have in our life, they're not possessions. Nature is going to run how long these people are going to be with you. When nature says it's time, you have to let them go. And you let them go with love. And you realize just how enriched you've been throughout all that time you've known that person. That's how we can enjoy, be enriched without being attached. And we can do that even with our own life. Don't be attached to your life. There come a time when you have to let it go. And in fact, the more you are able to let things go and let go of this silly sense of ownership, which is totally irrational, the easier your life will be, the longer it will be, and happy will be. There's the old Buddhist story, and it's a great one, just which the Buddha told us about how stupid attachments are and how it kills people. It's the old story of how people used to catch monkeys. So very easy to catch a monkey. All they did was get a coconut, you know, from the forest, hollow it out, maybe drink the juice, have the coconut white stuff. But they just have a little hole in the coconut, and they'd chain or tie the coconut to a tree, and all they did was put a banana inside the coconut and just go home. Of course, you know, monkeys love bananas. So the next day, the monkey would find the banana and put his hand in the coconut, but the hole is big enough to put a hand in, but not big enough to take a hand with a coconut in out. So the monkey can't take the banana out. He can take his hand out any time he wants, but not the hand with the banana. It's just too big. And the hunter comes along, and the monkey sees the hunter and tries even more frantically to get the banana out. But he can't. And the hunter gets even closer. And the monkey tries everything to get the banana out. But he won't. And that's how the hunter catches a monkey. All the monkey needs to do is just to let go of the banana. Get his hand out and can just go. But he can't. You know why? Because that's my banana. I found that banana. It's mine. And that's actually a very beautiful sort of description which the Buddha gave about the trouble with attachment. It's mine, it's mine, and it kills you sometimes. Can't you let it go? Can't you just free yourself and be at peace? You can see the problem over there. When it's time to let things go, when the hunter's coming, please let it go. Otherwise, you'll end up in some zoo or in some soup somewhere. So instead, just let it things go. When it's really going to hurt you, why? Some years ago, I gave a session at a grief and loss conference in Scarborough Beach Hotel. I forget what it's called these days, and these things always get, you know, taken over and whatever. And after the talk I gave about just how Buddhist attitude, how you can let go of these attachments and let go of these things and just be at peace. There's one woman, I'll never forget, she came up to me and she scolded me. She shouted at me, "How dare you try and take away my grief?" That's what she said. And obviously I was shocked, but then you realize that she was so attached to her grief, she didn't want to let it go. She liked her pain. And that really sort of started me looking very deeper into these things of attachments. You know, sometimes we get so attached to our personality, especially the victim personality. We will just not let it go. I am the victim. Could we get a bit of benefit from that? She was actually a well-known person who had, I think her daughter suffered some terrible crime. She was a victim. And she was getting much benefit, sympathy, gave her an identity, gave her someone who was recognized. And she was proud of her victimhood. And to let it go, she was too afraid to let it go. she'd have to forge a different identity for herself. And that's one of the biggest problems, why we don't let go of our anger, why we don't let go of our guilt, our grief, or whatever else is an attachment to something which happened in the past. It's as if we have to reform ourselves and be someone new. It's just the comfort we feel with the old type of self. And the Buddha actually just noticed that. When he started talking about, you know, the idea of a self, we've created these selves, who we think we are, and it's just so difficult to change that. Again, as a monk, we just totally always have to change this. I was telling to someone just earlier, you know, he had just come back from Sri Lanka, and in January I was in Sri Lanka, and I'm a big star in Sri Lanka. I go on TV, have breakfast with the president. And he was just saying, I'm a celebrity over there. But I told him, yeah, okay, over there I was, and being feted and having guards keep me from being mobbed. But when I came back over to Serpentine, I was the next week, I was cutting the bricks, getting myself really dirty, laboring. And so it's great, sort of, you know, you can be anyone you like as a monk. So you can enjoy and have fun, sort of, you know, being the celebrity. And the next bit, you're the laborer. I have fun doing that. That story, I tell so many talks and so many stories. This was a time when I told a Sri Lankan lady came to visit, and I'd just been finishing mixing concrete. Did I tell that story recently? Okay. I must have been somewhere else. I told this story. So I was in the monastery at Serpentine, and we were having some sort of project over there, building something. And you know, I love getting dirty. You know, boys being boys. You know, it doesn't matter how old you are. You know, get a sort of a concrete truck or mixing in a concrete machine, and I'm right in there if I possibly can. So I was in there just helping mix the concrete with the other monks. You know, and pour it and level it and everything else. It's really good fun. It's good exercise as well. You know, get fit. So there I was. You know, just finished off. And of course, anyone who's been doing such physical work, you know, you get all this sort of this muck all over your body, like. Concrete doesn't always stay in the mixer. It just goes on your face and on your robes. Just what happens, you know, shuffling it this way, shuffling it that way. And so I had all these grey spots on my robes. And I was going from the work site in our monastery, you know, to the showers to take a shower. And on the way, I passed this Sri Lankan lady. She was really dressed in a very expensive sari and all these bangles, you know, on her wrist. You know, you could hear a mile away. It's like the ice cream van coming. I think you know what I mean. Jingle, jingle, jingle. And so she passed me and she said, I've come here to see Ajahn Brahm. Do you know where Ajahn Brahm is? That's what she said. And, you know, I'm a smart guy. I thought very quickly. And I said, if you go down to the eating hall, the Dhanasala, he'd probably be there in about 10 or 15 minutes. So I quickly had a shower, you know, changed into a proper robe, and I went to see her, and I chatted to her for about 15 minutes, half an hour. You know, she asked some questions about Buddhism, about the monastery, and what we're doing here in Australia, and she was really impressed. And so afterwards she said, you know, you've got a really good monastery, and that's very nice. This is the sort of Buddhism we'd like in Sri Lanka. It's brilliant here, but if you don't mind me criticizing one thing, on the way here, I saw one of your monks, and he looked a mess. He was very sloppy. Monks shouldn't look like that. Can you please tell him off? And I say, yes, madam, I'll talk to him later. I did talk to myself. I talk to myself very often, so I did keep my promise. I did talk to myself. But what that really liked, which was the real Ajahn Brahm? I don't know. So I do a lot of things. I've got a lot of responsibilities. But I always tell people that whenever I go overseas, as soon as I get on that aircraft, I'm not an abbot anymore. I'm not a teacher. I'm just a traveler. When I go to another country, I never take this monastery with me. Because this is not just who you are. You can let go of your identity, of who you take yourself to be. Otherwise, you suffer. Otherwise, if I thought I was the abbot and teacher, I would never be able to have fun with other people. I'd always be a teacher. That's why some of you are always a mother, always a father, always you know, an expert. Please don't have any fixed identities, because those attachments to identities are the biggest source of suffering. Because you'll attach to all sorts of identities: the grief-stricken mother, the victimized sort of business person, the jilted lover, whatever it is. If you really take that to be you, that is the attachment which stops all healing. Because what are you really attached to anyway? You're just stuck in the past. As I said in that meditation, you just got this backpack, which is not just carried, which is glued to your back. What they sometimes call the monkey on your back, which won't let go. Your past, your identity. Yeah, it's scary sometimes to take that off, because you're so used to that identity. But now you can actually be free. Free to be anything. This is letting go of those attachments to who you think you are. And when you look at how sort of sometimes people, when they get sort of to my age, they go dyeing their hair. I don't dye my hair. What's wrong with being grey or being bald? You know, just be natural. It's much easier. You don't have to spend so much money trying to look young. How many people go putting Botox in their bodies or having these nips and tucks or whatever else you do? I mean, oh, come on. Just be yourself and be proud of whoever you happen to be, whatever you happen to be, at any time, whatever you happen to be. It's much more fun when you just let go of this what might call like fixed identity. So you can always change at any time, at any moment. I have to do that because, you know, sometimes when you do funeral services, I have to remember when I'm doing a funeral service, you know, actually what I'm going to do, because some of these funeral directors, they are so funny. It must be some way that they sort of compensate with, you know, the dreariness and the sadness of their job dealing with all these grief-stricken people. Because I know many of these funeral directors, and sometimes, those of you who have been to funerals, you know, at Karakata or Pinneroo or Fremantle, you know what happens. You've got the hearse there, and all you guys are actually walking around the back. It's usually me or the priest. We walk in the front, and I'll confess to you, I'll be honest, we usually tell jokes on the way to the crematorium on the chapel. So, you know, you are all, you can't see us in front of the hearse, thank goodness. Otherwise, you really get upset. Okay, one of those jokes they were saying about this guy. Because I always like telling a joke during a talk. That's what people are usually waiting for. So now's the joke's coming about this guy got stopped by the police. I know it's double demerits this weekend. So they looked in his back. He had his machetes in his back, in the back of his car. And he said, "What you got those machetes for?" And he said, "Look, I'm a juggler in a circus." "Yeah, great excuse," said the priest. "I don't believe you. Come on, juggle." You know, he thought he was some sort of bikie or some sort of guy up to no good with machetes. So he actually got this machetes. He was throwing them up in the air. He actually was a juggler. He was very skillful in this. And the guy's coming behind him. He said, "Oh, my God, I hope the police don't stop me. Look what they're doing to test if you drunk too much these days." I thought it was funny anyway. That's what they're making you do to prove you're sober. But anyhow, they were telling you all these jokes so that when you're actually walking there, you know, you're just a good friend. And as soon as obviously you get to the funeral, to the chapel, that's what I've got to remember. Now I've got to change my identity. Now I've got to be the sensitive monk. And sometimes I get it confused sometimes, because sometimes you're doing marriages, sometimes you're doing funerals, sometimes I get them confused. Or is there any difference anyway? I won't go into that. But when you sort of get attached to identities, that's one of the big problems. So what else can we let go of? You know, we can actually, let go of all this trying to control business. Because that's one of the biggest attachments which people have. You know, they're always trying to control their life, plan it all out, make it all happen. That's why I never plan my talks. I don't know which way the talk's going to go. And it's totally out of control. So don't blame me if the talk's no good. It's just nature. I don't own these things. So when you don't actually control and you can actually detach from controlling, that's when you can really enjoy the moment. Because when you've planned it all out and you've got it all fixed, what you're going to do, where's the joy in that? Where's the happiness of just seeing just the way that life evolves in interesting ways which you can never, ever predict? Now, I don't know what you thought your life was going to be. But look, when I sort of even became a monk, I never thought I'd be in front of a TV screen. I never thought that I'd be sitting up here talking to you guys with a camera on me, you know, putting this on the internet all over the world. I never thought that. I thought I'd just be a simple monk, you know, living in a cave somewhere. Actually, I do live in a cave, but it's a tourist attraction now. My home, where I live, my cave, on a Saturday and Sunday, when I'm not there, I'm here. Actually, people actually go to that cave, and they like to see the cave in which I live. It's really ridiculous. I mean, I'm just a monk. It's only a cave. It's only a hole in the ground. What do you want to go and see that for? But anyway, people like seeing it. They think it's peaceful. But anyway, so this is a really weird thing, being a monk in our modern world. You know, even actually people ask me actually to sign books. So, you know, it's like being a celebrity. I mean, what's a monk? Being a celebrity, I'm giving up the world. But anyhow, where was I going with this? I forget where. But anyway, I'm just being out of control. There you go. It shows you that I really am out of control. And you can enjoy life much more when you're out of control because you get into interesting things. Oh, look, well, this is another thing which happened just today. I was checking the email. And I think I told some of you, if you've got good memories, that during the last retreat period, I did take one invitation to leave the monastery, and that was to go to this World Computer Conference in Brisbane. And the only reason I did that, because I thought that was interesting. I'd never done that before. You know, I'm a monk, okay? You know, I can get on a computer, but I don't know anything about IT. And there they asked me to give a keynote at the World Computer Conference in Brisbane last year. I thought, that's interesting. That's a sort of challenge, because I like doing weird things. And so I rocked up there, and I gave a keynote, and I just got the email. It said, from the organizers just this afternoon, they said that was the most popular presentation, because they put everything on the internet. That's been the most downloaded session. And the president of the World Computer Society in Australia summarized it up and printed it out and published it in the Australian, in the IT section. So there you go. Sort of, I'm the expert on IT, just the world-renowned lecturer on IT. Is that who I am? I don't know. So that's wonderful. When you don't attach to anything, and when you just don't control anything, it's just amazing just how your life can evolve and how your relationships can evolve and how your day can evolve. So please don't plan out your day. What you're going to do today and how you're going to do it and what's going to happen. Because you're killing yourself. You're killing life with those attachments to control and plan. Just let it go. It's fearful. Because when I went to that computer conference, I saw all these nerds, and these were professors and, you know, stuff like that. They were all in these. No one looked like me. I couldn't see anyone I could relate to at the World Computer Conference. But nevertheless, you just rock up there and have a great time. Simply because I don't know what's going to happen. I don't care what's going to happen. You can always just adapt and see what happens next. That's when you don't plan. You can always be adaptable, innovative, and joyful. So don't attach to your plans. Please shelve them. Oh, you can have loose plans. But be willing to change those plans on a moment's notice. And don't have plan B. Just plan I don't know. And just see what happens. Yeah, it's a bit fearful at first, but you'll find you have much more fun. And you get by. You'll be okay. And in life, that means you're living life. Because we all know that life is out of control. We don't know what's going to happen next. It's just a very weird journey. But when we know it's going to end, we can enjoy every moment. We don't know when it's going to end, so let's enjoy this moment now. And then, not attachment, detachment from plans. And please, no, don't sort of attach to all your ideas of other people as well. Because I don't know that... Somebody, actually, there's a person who was an old fellow member here. They told me that I think they had been married about 25 years, and the last of their children got married. and so left home. And there they were together. So they went on a holiday together. You know, the first time they could actually go, just the two of them. And they came back afterwards, and one of the partners said, it was such a shock. Such a shock. I didn't realize who I was married to all these years. Because for all those years, they'd been relating to each other as father and mother of their kids. But now their kids were out of the equation. The whole relationship, the whole identity had changed. And they had to rediscover each other again. It was amazing. They'd been married for so many years. And they said, but I didn't know each other. Of course you don't know each other. And this is one of the things with relationships. If you think you know your partner, your relationship's dead. Of course it's dead. You know them, you can predict them, you think you know them. But isn't a relationship just discovering new things about that person, things you never expected before? Life is discovery. And that's where you look at yourself. I discover new things about myself. If you think you know yourself, you're dead. So it's wonderful that you can completely see new aspects of yourself, new aspects of life, new aspects. I've been living in that monastery at Serpentine 27 years. But every now and again you go to a place, oh, this is really different. I'm seeing it anew. That's one of the great things about mindfulness and meditation. You can go deeply into something and see things you've never seen before. That's why even a relationship, you can see things in a partner, you can see things in yourself you never expected. Now you're discovering. Now you're not attached to the old. Because if you're attached to the old, it prevents you from seeing the present. That's our problem. You know, you've got your idea of who your partner is. And sometimes it can be very negative ideas. Yeah, they're selfish, they just think of themselves, they're grumpy, they never do this. Now if that's who you think your partner is, that's all you'll see. There's no way you can see anything new in them. Because, you know, your perceptions are imprisoned by the past, by attachment to the past experiences. People do change, if you let them. But actually, they don't really change. You just see different aspects of them. So it makes life alive. It sees different aspects in you. So don't be attached to the past. Don't be attached to your ideas of who other people are, or even who you are. So you can be like a chameleon, always finding new parts of yourself, discovering new aspects. Isn't that alive? It's fearful, because sometimes the known is comfortable and the unknown is challenging. But isn't that what life is all about? Challenging, discovering, seeing new things. It's not about comfort, it's about being alive. And that's just what we do when we practice in this path. We go down this path, letting old stuff go, facing new stuff, until we actually learn, just the less we have. Just like I was saying in that simile of me just walking down the streets of the forest paths everywhere in Thailand, because I kept on seeing new things. Life was totally unpredictable. I didn't know where I was going to eat next. I didn't know where I was going to sleep next. But I had to trust, yeah, it would be okay. And that meant that all the fear was left behind. And it's the fear which causes the attachments. Trust. Let go. Give up that fear. Because the fear is the prison which causes the attachments. It doesn't matter what happens. You survive okay. And what's the worst thing which can happen to you? In our society, the worst thing which can happen to you is you die. But you're a Buddhist. You get reborn again. So there's nothing to fear. It's a win-win situation. Enjoy your life. If you do die, you just get a new body again. You start all over again. Maybe a better one next time, especially you make lots of good karma by joining the Buddhist Society of West Australia and putting money in the box and helping out with all our projects and joining the committee and all these other things which are important things to do. You make lots of good karma, then you know you're going to get a good body. So how you can be afraid of death? So that way that there's no fear. When there's no fear, there's no control. When there's no control, no attachment. Actually, you find you live a long time then. People are afraid of dying, die young. Oh, what's that great... I better stop now. Just one more story. This is one of my favorite quotes of one of my, he's a real scallywag, but you could admire this person because he was very smart, by that comedian, George Burns. Okay, he's dead now, but when he actually said it was something like his 96th or 97th birthday. And for those of you who know this American comedian, and he was a scallywag all his life. Now, at 96, he was still going to nightclubs, okay, and staying out till 2 or 3 in the morning, and drinking lots of whiskey, smoking as well, and, eating sort of, KFC and all these fatty foods. And they asked him, it's probably healthy food at KFC, I better be careful, they may sue me or sue the Buddhist Society. But anyway, I think you know what I mean. I don't need to sort of criticize any group. But anyway, eating really sort of unhealthy food. And the interviewer asked him, aren't you afraid of your health? Aren't you worried, with your lifestyle? You smoke, you drink alcohol, you eat fatty foods, you're out late at night. Aren't you worried about your lifestyle? And his reply was, no, I'm not worried about my lifestyle. My wife was worried about my lifestyle, and that's why she died 20 years ago. And that's a funny story, but there's something true in that. Isn't it the fear and worry which kills you? So I'm not saying that that's what you should do in life, because otherwise some will go, okay, I'm going to go drink now, go to nightclubs, and then you die tonight and sue me again. But look, it's a waste of time suing me, because I've got no money. But anyway, the purpose of that story is that when you can let go of fear, then you can let go of your attachments, and you can just adapt from time to time. You don't keep things. And you see life anew. You let go of the past. You let go of the fear of the future, like we do in meditation, which is what we're talking about, the opposite of attachments, learning how to let go. And letting go is not a dull and dreary state. When I say detachment, it doesn't mean like sleeping under the bridge and being miserable all the time. Learning how to let go of attachment is called being free. So remember, these things imprison you. Your grief, your anger, being a victim, too many possessions, owning partners, thinking you possess your parents, not letting them go when it's time to let them go. Please learn how to let go. And you can be free and you can be happy, which is what I wish of you. Thank you for listening. Okay, any comments or questions about this evening's talk? Yeah. This is actually the whole purpose. How can you value, enjoy the concert, but not be attached to it? Because you value it knowing it's going to go. Not taking for granted, not owning them, not possessing them. So don't own life, don't possess life. Enjoy it. Value it. When it's time to go, we had a great time together. And you know from the very beginning that that moment's going to come. When it does come, it's anticipated, expected. You can't do anything about it. It's not your fault. It's not life's fault. It's just a fact of life. Yeah. Indeed, just from the very beginning to recognize it's impermanent. We've got a word for that, anicca. It's not going to be there forever. We know that every moment, and that actually makes life more sort of precious. So we do value it more. We do enjoy it more. And because we value it more, when the time does come, then what a great time we've had together. What a great concert it was. It's beautiful. Thank you so much. Now it's going, and we go with happiness in our heart, not sadness. Okay, so everyone's going now, so I better let you go. And I let you go with happiness in my heart, no sadness. Okay, so before actually, the vice president's going to be sad because she's got some announcements to make. So, over to you, Ming, for the announcements, which are going to be so
thank
important.
Thank you, Ajahn. You have got a follower that has taken your advice.
Uh-oh.
That person has dropped
the car keys.
The Mitsubishi car.
Okay.
And so that person is going to walk home. So whoever has taken Ajahn Brahm's advice, and if you don't want to walk home, then here it is.
Yeah, so whoever wants a Mitsubishi car,
then please only the owners.
Just a reminder that tomorrow is the start of the 4 Saturdays meditation sessions at the Shrine Room next door from 3 to 4:15. And then on Sunday is the seminary ordination at 1 p.m.
That's a nun's ordination. This is making nuns.
Conducted by Ajahn Brahm too.
No. Well, not actually conducted, but I'll be just cracking the jokes.
Yes. Yeah. Bhikkhuni Dhammananda.
Dhammananda, yes.
At 1 o'clock in this hall. And on Monday, the 7th of March, Ajahn Brahm will be ordaining Venerable Buddha Rakita, who is sitting next to Ajahn.
That's making monks.
And Venerable Buddha Rakita is the one that will be conducting the Kalyana Mita meditation weekend. And registrations for that weekend retreat is still open. Could you please see Anusha, who is sitting down there? Just put up your hands, please.
Very good.
Thank you.
Is there an age limit on it? After everyone, as long as you're breathing. Okay, very good.
We are looking for a volunteer with a ute or a trailer to transport a gopher that has been offered on loan, perpetual loan, to help with disabled retreatants in Jhana Grove. So we need somebody to transport it from Malaga to Jhana Grove in Serpentine. Please, can you come up to see me if you can offer transport? Thank you.
Can't we drive it there? If you're very patient, it might take 6 hours.
I think you look good in an Ajahn.
Yeah.
As you all are aware, Ajahn Vyama has retired from her role as the abbot of a Dhammasara nun's monastery. So we are inviting you to contribute photos and stories to this reflections for Ajahn Vyama. A DVD is being developed that will reflect Ajahn Vyama's life as a nun and abbot in WA, and also to provide a record of her contributions to Buddhism. This DVD is intended as an expression of our affection and gratitude, specifically for Ajahn Vyama's personal use. So we have all the details that is in the website, as well as on the notice board, as well as some flyers. Ron Mutton, if you want more information, Ron, where are you?
Over the corner.
Yes, and Ron will be at the door to give out those pamphlets. Because all the information details will be found in the website as well. So if you can go to the website, you don't have to take the pamphlets from Ron. And last but not least, Chris Perrier has another announcement, which I'll pass over.
Thanks, Ming. How many people here saw the ABC program Making Australia Happy over Christmas New Year? Just show me, can I have a show of hands, please? How many people saw that? Unbelievable. Wow. This is a practical program of happiness skills, which is very much a practical expression of how to do it for generating right effort that the Buddha talked about in the Brahma Viharas. it's not different from Buddhism, it is Buddhism, but they don't talk about Buddhism necessarily per se on this. I wanted to make available three sessions just to have a bit of a discussion group with this. It talks about things like the three good things practice, or how to write a forgiveness letter, or what happens with your nervous system and your blood and your immune response system when you go down to the salvos and volunteer for 2 hours, or if you go and volunteer at the food fair here, you actually get physical payoffs for that. And it talks a lot about, so there's a lot of science in this, which actually backs up a great deal of what Ajahn Brahm's been talking about for years. So I wanted to find out if there'd be any interest in people seeing this, this thing. It's 3 one-hour sessions. We'd do it over 3 weeks probably. Can I have a show of hands to see if there's anyone who's interested in this, please? Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay, that's good. All right. Okay, we might, if anyone's interested, come and see me and we'll talk about when this might happen. Probably be before the 3 o'clock meditation, or a Tuesday night, or on the range retreat. So, if interested, please come and see me. Thank you.
Very good.
Excuse me, Ajahn, one more announcement, sorry. Just to remind you that on Sunday the 20th is the Minnawara Festival, the Armadale Meditation Group. We'll have a stall there, and it'd be great if you are going down that way to support them in Armadale. They were the ones that had the elephant stall a week ago, and they raised a lot of money for the quake victims in Christchurch. Joe, are you still around, Joe?
I think it was for the bushfire victims in Rolderstone, I think, not the quake victims. That's right. I think, yeah, the bushfire.
Sorry. It was for the bushfire, not the Christchurch quake. Anyway, the particulars are on the board if you're interested. Thank you.
Okay, so now we can pay respects to Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, and go and have a cup of tea.
Arahaṃ sammā sambuddho bhagavā buddhaṃ bhagavantaṃ abhivādeyami savakkhato bhagavata dhammo dhammaṃ namassāmi Supatipanno bhagavato savaka sangho sanghang namami.